You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Peacock streaming. The biggest sports and live events on the planet.
Touchdown.
From Super Bowl 56.
What a game this is.
To complete coverage of the Winter Olympics. Streaming every event, every day.
Yes!
It's all the unprecedented.
United States wins gold.
Unstoppable.
Sensational.
Unbelievable. Sports to love. Sign up now at PeacockTV.com.
Mirror Man, Mirror Man. You twist and turn my mind until I don't know who I am. Mirror Man.
Good morning and welcome to a European edition of the Arsenal Opinion Podcast. We said we do on the whistle. It's not quite on the whistle. Both of us had busy days, but my word, was it worth it? Because we are here on a glorious Thursday evening celebrating an Arsenal win, and I am joined by Matt Candela. How are you doing, Matt?
Very good, Pete. Very good. Excited to be through to the quarterfinals. Season is still alive.
The season is still alive, and because the European season is still alive, that kind of keeps us slightly interested in the Premier League as well. There's something to play for, so that's exciting. Let's just jump right in to the game. A mixed bag of emotions. Give me a hot take.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just relieved that we're through, obviously, and like a late winner is always immensely satisfying, and I think, given the amount of travelling that had been done, given the stupidity of playing a home game in Greece and everything that's gone with it, all you can really do is be pleased that we're through. I don't think you can be too negative about anything else, to be honest.
Yeah, my I don't even know whether I have a hot take. I was so furious. I feel like I'm being victimized watching Arsenal sometimes. I feel like, you know, I've got lots of grievances. We get punished to the max every time we make a mistake. It felt like refereeing decisions weren't going our way. That offside against Aubameyang, you're like, this is going to be one of those nights. And one of my friends messaged me at halftime. He's going, we're going to get fucked over here. And I don't know. There was something about that that second goal that they scored and that celebration, and it just felt like that was going to be ringing in my head for the next few weeks. But fair play to the players, they pulled it out of the bag. They shaped up. They never gave up. Scoring a goal in the 89th minute or whenever it was felt important. Like they still cared, and watching them celebrate like it was a cup final. Like some people criticize that, but look, the season we're having, that was a cup final last night. That was. You know, they kicked the can down the road with regards to getting criticised in the press. But, you know, we're through to the last 16. There's some tasty sides. I think it'd be exciting.
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest thing is it kept the season alive, didn't it? That was, I mean, if we were sat here now out of the Europa, my God, can you imagine what the response would be on social media? And let's face it, it would just be a miserable slow clap all the way to the end of the season. Whereas, you know, Mikel Arteta has basically got a bit of a get out of jail card. You know, we are two games away from a semi-final. And if we can get to the semi-final, then we've got a hell of a chance of going on and winning it, I think. So really, really was so crucial. And I think the other important piece is he's stumbled across, you know, this sort of almost like a new team, which is this Aubameyang up top and then these three behind. I don't think it's any coincidence that he's played that team, you know, three games out of four or whatever. He obviously thinks that this is the way forward for him. It's definitely a formation that I think we as fans like, especially when you can get Thomas Partey and Xhaka behind those three. It's the best it can be right now. And then that solid defence. And I think it would be a massive vindication that we're on the right track if we could put some results together in the league. We're not going to get above 8th, I don't think, or 10th, really. It's going to be really, really tricky. But if we can put some runs in the league and make a big push on the Europa, it will be a decent foundation for next season.
Yeah, I agree with that. And because part of the run into the end of the season, it's not about whether we make the top four, because I don't think that that's on the cards. Now it's like, all right, the season's been horrific. If you accept that the season up till December was horrific, what have we seen after it? Like, I know that I'm leaning on those terrible tables where it was like Wenger won the Premier League if you look at it as a calendar year or the half year or whatever. But, you know, if we accept that rookie coaches make mistakes, if we accept that the pandemic has been terrible and we look at performances since Christmas, we're still pretty defensively solid. We're top three for goals per game and we're fifth points per game. But I worried that if we lost today, that might crater. And then, you know, I kept on having it in the back of my mind that you and I have been talking about, this is potentially another death spiral for Arteta. And it's unfair because, you know, like, it wasn't really expected that we'd lose against Manchester City, but to lose against a fairly weak Benfica side in the manner that it looked like we were going to lose, you just felt like that would really drain any positive narrative that you'd have around Arteta going into the season. So I'm pleased that we won, but I did want to talk about some aspects of the game. I wanted to talk about fatigue just in general, because, you know, I like watching other managers talk about the season, especially, you know, more experienced season managers, and they all comment on how nuts this season has been. I think Klopp has really suffered off the back of it, and he complains a lot. Mourinho has been talking about it. Even Pep Guardiola, sitting where he's in the league, is complaining about it. And a lot of the criticism about the performance tonight was, you know, we were slow at passing it out, and players looked tired. But you do have to kind of remember, like, playing against Leeds, even when you win 4-1. That's hard running in the most physical league in the world. Then you go to Benfica away, get next to no sleep, have to deal with Manchester City chasing shadows for 90 minutes. And then you go away to Greece. I mean, what's Greece? Four and a half, 5 hour flight. And then you have to show up again. Like, it's not surprising that they're knackered. And now they've got to play Leicester on Sunday. And Leicester lost to Slavia Prague tonight. They went out of the competition. They played basically a full team. James Maddison wasn't there, but he's injured, which is a bit of luck for us going into Sunday. But nobody's really escaping fatigue. And I feel like sometimes we're a little bit inward looking when we judge leggy performances.
Well, I think the other thing is professional sport is all about the finest of margins. You know, there's not a huge amount of difference between, you know, a top international class striker and a championship striker. It's maybe like 1 or 2% consistently, and I think the level of fatigue, the lack of rest that players are getting, is definitely impacting a lot of the game. I mean, it's not just the travel; it's the travel, it's the disruption to sleep, it's, you know, any number of things. So
being away from your family and
Well, that might be good, but
I would if I could do away days at work right now, I would be out that door, let me tell you.
But yeah, so I think it's playing a big role, and it was interesting to hear Arteta say that Saka is very fatigued at the moment. I mean, it sounded like the fabled red zone that Wenger used to talk about, and it's unsurprising. And there is definitely a case for his long-term welfare for him to maybe get a break and be rested. And maybe that should happen this weekend. It sounded like maybe it will happen this weekend. Because we have to look at the long term. We have to look at him. We have to look at Smith Rowe, who again is, he had a break last weekend, but you know, he's just come into the team. He's super young and he's played 10 games on the bounce, you know, 90 minutes a lot of the time. So we've got to protect our players through this period, because we can't afford to. There are two or three players that we will not get through the Europa without.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think the pinnacle of the red zone was Jack Wilshere, 54 yeah. games when he was 18, and let's be honest, he never recovered from that. And I think that you could probably play someone like Martinelli against Leicester, who will be slightly deflated and tired after going out of that. Like, his power and pace game would probably be pretty good.
Yeah.
So let's talk about some of the other concerns from the game. I felt like it, I don't know, like, you have to remember fatigue causes, you know, mental tiredness as well. But it was quite alarming, the amount of mistakes in the system last night. David Luiz and Gabriel almost looked like they were arguing on the pitch at times. Gabriel has looked quite erratic for the last 3 months, in my opinion.
Well, I think, yeah, I mean, it was. I think what was interesting was, I don't know if you saw the Benfica manager's rant afterwards.
He went nuts. He went
nuts, but he was talking about the impact of COVID and players who had COVID at one point. And, you know, I don't think you can underestimate, and I thought it was a really, really valid point, because, you know, we all know people who have had COVID, and many of them are still struggling with what sound like relatively small side effects, like not being able to taste things, not being like some fatigue and stuff like that. But again, this is professional sport, and I don't think you can downplay the effect that having a virus can have on you and your aerobic capacity, especially, and missing training for a period of time, your mental sharpness, all of those things. So I think that Gabriel is suffering a bit of a COVID hangover, and I think it feels like he's slowly getting back to it. I think the fact that he's playing is proof that, you know, Arteta probably thinks he's his best defender when he's on form, and is trying to like play him back into form. And let's be honest, after the centre halves we've had over the last decade, even a sort of slightly sluggish post long COVID Gabriel is probably better than most defenders we've got.
Yeah, and you kind of felt like the reason that he picked those two tonight is that he knew that Benfica were going to play a deep block, and he needed these big passes to be able to thread balls.
Yeah. I mean, David Luiz, isn't he? It's just...
Comes from the territory. Five good, one terrible.
Yeah, and he's normally pretty good in the big games. It's the smaller games he can be terrible in.
Yeah. And... I felt sorry for Ceballos, and I like him, but that, I mean, he hasn't had a final ball like that going forward all season.
I mean, I've had one of my best mates, Arsenal season ticket holder, and me agree to disagree on Ceballos. I personally think we should just give him back to Real Madrid, and just think there's far better ways of spending 25 million than bringing him, keeping him. My friend's opinion is you're not going to do much better than Danny Ceballos for the money, and he's he's a good player and has a number of good games. So so we'll see, right?
I think he's a tidy player. I just still don't exactly see what his purpose is in that midfield. And I think when you've got a limited player like Xhaka, and we find, you know, it's kind of Ceballos works well on his own. It works well with Partey. Xhaka works well with Partey, but the two of them combined is problematic. And I think that if there is an opportunity to give one of those problems back to Madrid and find somebody that has the right physicality, can move at the right speed and, you know, grow into the role, like I would rather give a Basuma or someone like that.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. I'd rather invest the money in a proven Premiership player than have someone who maybe appears from the outside to be a more sophisticated player, but actually sometimes you just need people who work in the system and can play in the Premiership. And you know, you just look at how Liverpool have recruited so successfully in that way, and you wonder like whether there's an opportunity for us to do that.
Yeah, I agree with that. And it's, the only shame is that we're so skint at the moment, it's almost impossible to imagine that you could extract a player like Basuma for the 25 million that Madrid are apparently asking for Ceballos. But
yeah, and you worry that Real Madrid could easily say something like, well, if you want Odegaard on loan for another year, you've got to buy Ceballos now. You know, all that sort of stuff that goes on in all these deals.
Yeah, exactly. And talking of Odegaard, I wanted to put this to you. Odegaard and Smith Rowe don't look like they can play together at the moment. Am I too early on that? Have we got Frank Lampard and Steven Gerrard? Is it 2006 again?
At the moment, it's sort of okay. I just think I personally would like to see Smith Rowe play in the central position, and Odegaard try himself out left. I just feel like we're pushing up. I think Smith Rowe's a better player than Odegaard. Call that controversial.
I think he's so fast, isn't he? He's such a powerful. Such a powerful player, pops up everywhere. However, he's a little bit restricted. Odegaard is a little bit Mesut Ozil-ish.
A little bit, yeah. And he's, you know, he looks nice and he does a lot of nice touches. But there's something I love about Smith Rowe. Do you remember when Wenger's always done that to his players. He always puts them out on the left. Do you remember that's how he used to bring central midfielders through. Aaron Ramsey spent a load of time out on the left. It's like an educational area for Arsene Wenger. So I don't know. It's interesting. Arteta seems to really like him, doesn't he? Like straight off the bat, he seems to be a big Odegaard fan. He's given him the minutes.
When he pulls the trigger on a final ball, it's sublime. I know that pass for Aubameyang being offside was stunning. He's got it in his locker. He feels a little bit like slightly risk averse at the moment. Like he doesn't.
Yeah.
He's more focused on efficiency than he is making the daring moves. But it takes a while to adapt to a new team. And I think again, we have to remember that he's been living in Spain. He's been sitting on the bench in Madrid, and now all of a sudden he's in these blood and guts games for Arsenal, trying to keep us in the fucking Europa League of all places.
Well, I think it's interesting. Like, I think we're so much better with the handbrake off. And I think this is going to be another big question for Arteta is, you know, we were up against it. We're 2-1 down. We needed to score two goals to stay in the competition. And we took the handbrake off and went for it. And, you know, that feels a little bit like anti-Arteta in a way. He doesn't seem to... He's not a coach who likes going for it in that way. He likes more control. But as a fan, it was so much more satisfying to see that sort of drive and determination and passion. And no one does that better than Kieran Tierney. Him and Saka, it was just great to see them drag us over the line.
Yeah, Kieran Tierney really is captain material, in my opinion.
I love him.
Yeah, he loves to win. He never stops. Like, if we can just keep him fit, because he feels like we really need a backup left back this summer that can actually slip in and do the right thing, because I fear that he's another one that it's almost like you can't not have him on the team sheet.
Yeah, no, we've got to find. I mean, I think we might have a good left back in coming through for some reason. Is it
Cottrell?
Osei Tutu, is that his name?
The guy on loan in Germany.
Yeah, I think so. Isn't he a left back? I'm not. Anyway, I thought we had a decent left back coming through, but you know, someone who can just play some of the easier home games when we're back with fans, and you know, a bit like Gael Clichy used to do for Ashley Cole. You know, just give him a breather and make sure that we wrap him up in cotton wool a bit.
We've also got to acknowledge that he calls his he calls the leg he scored with tonight the gun. I love that. I love that. He's got a tweet out there, the gun. So it would be remiss not to talk about the main talking point after every single Arteta substitution. Why Willian? But today, a broken clock is correct twice a day. He opened them up. There were eight players. No, there were nine Benfica players in the box when Willian picked out Tierney. I don't want to call it an amazing assist, but it was an assist. Tierney had to do a lot off the back of it. But Arteta's rationale was it was a tight game. It was a deep block. And Willian is one of the best players in tight spaces. Are we buying that? Or can we afford not to buy it?
Look, we can't. It's better for us that we get something out of Willian, because he's not going anywhere for 3 years or 2 years. So we have to get off this soapbox and we have to start trying to get some form out of him, because he's just not going anywhere.
Yeah, true.
I can't stand the guy. But you know, maybe a bit of confidence will help him. And you know, if he scores the winner in the Europa Cup final, then it was worth signing him. So that's football, right?
Yeah. And I also got some intel that actually he's not really downing tools. Everyone at the training ground really likes him. He trains really hard, but I think the reality is he's just an old player, and I don't think Arteta understood what he was purchasing.
Let's be honest, I don't think Arteta had a clear vision of what he was of his system at the beginning of the season. Like, if you go back and you go, I mean, it's quite Wenger-esque, and maybe it's just all managers. You've got to, like, you sort of stumble across it, but we've had so many iterations. Like, we had the counter-attacking team of last season.
Yeah.
Then the beginning of the season, we had like the
fine margin shithousing.
Fine margin shithousing. But you know, very little creative players. All, like, the whole team, like a hardworking team. Then we shifted gears, and now we've got this sort of like the three behind Aubameyang, with the pair of midfield like pivots. But what is the system? I mean, it's changing all the time, right? But one thing's for sure, Willian doesn't suit where we've ended up.
No, he doesn't. But I think it'd probably suit if he was fast. Right.
Like, oh yeah.
I'm not sure any player that slow is going to suit a Mikel Arteta system. But the point is, at least our season doesn't hinge on it. At least we found something within the
yeah.
The
you could see Willian. You could see Willian working quite well in a 4-4-2.
Yeah, yeah. I just hope that assist doesn't open up 10 games of trying to get it out of him again.
Oh God, I know. But I think he's definitely going to get the start on Sunday.
Yeah, I know. But this is the other thing. It's like, yeah, sure, okay. You know, it on paper it pays to get the most out of him because we're spending so much fucking money on his contract. But on the other flip side of things, wouldn't you rather see Martinelli out there?
100%.
And Martinelli's gone from, oh my God, Martinelli's injured, we're fucked, to is it one bad afternoon against Aston Villa? And we've barely seen him since. What's the logic behind that? Like, if you've got a fatigued team, surely a live wire like Gabriel Martinelli is what you need.
Well, that's the thing, because Arteta basically tried to insinuate that it's because he needs to bring him back slowly because of injury. But then at the same time, you're like, yeah, but you're prepared to burn Saka. Like, it's not like there's a principle and the principle is very important.
And Thomas Partey even like looks Arteta in the right way. And it's like, are you okay? He's like, no, I lost my leg in a car crash. He's like, get on that pitch, son.
Yeah, he's desperate to get him playing, but he is so good, isn't he?
Isn't he good? The difference in class, that the gulf between the centre midfielders that we've got right now and Thomas Partey comes in, he's press resistant. You know that if he gets two players around him, that ball is not getting lost, and you can't say the same of our other midfielders. So
yeah,
that's also another real positive thing. You know, heading into the final run, Thomas Partey should be fresh.
Right, he shouldn't he? He's played about 20 minutes all season.
So, you know, we go into Sunday, he's going to start. Maybe we start Martinelli through the middle. Oh, no, he's going to play Aubameyang, right? Because Aubameyang has found a little bit of form.
Or he might play Lacazette.
Yeah, Lacazette's gone from, oh, wow, we found a role for Lacazette. He gets all the young kids buzzing on the pitch, and then he's like binned immediately when Oba comes back. But I guess if you don't score goals and you're a striker, that's kind of the thing.
Yeah.
So,
but it's now a big game, right? On Sunday, it's like if we win, well, we're on a roll. The other thing, it's going to be interesting. We're going to have to look at the fixtures, but if we get through the quarters, then suddenly we're going to be resting players for the league games and keeping everyone, making sure that everyone's fresh and ready for these Europa games.
Yeah, I know. And if you look at the fixture list, well, let's look at the teams. Let's talk about the amazing roster of teams that we could get games against. Ajax, Dinamo Zagreb, Dinamo Kiev, Granada, Man United, Milan, Molde, Olympiacos, Rangers, Roma, Shakhtar, Slavia Prague, Spurs, Young Boys, Villarreal. So you got, there's quite a lot of interesting narratives there. The ones that I want to avoid, I don't want to play Unai Emery in the Europa League. Just can you imagine the fucking shit I'd get on Twitter when Don Good Evening smashes Arteta over two legs, 6-0. I don't think I could live with it. I honestly don't think I could live with it. But, you know, it's going to be Villarreal, it's going to be Spurs, or it's going to be United in the next round.
Yeah, it's going to be one of those three.
Or Ivan Gazidis.
Or Roma.
Or Roma. I think the hope is that you get, obviously you get a weak team, but whoever you get is a short plane journey. Don't even know, do you? Because you don't know where you're going to be playing. Like, two away legs again wouldn't be great.
Yeah, the hope is that Spurs and United can get knocked out by someone else in the next round and get some hard draws, or even that they play each other and we get rid of one of them. And then get the luck of the draw, basically.
Yeah.
But I don't want to play a British team. I think they're the toughest teams in it.
Yeah, so the tougher two teams left will be Spurs and United, in my opinion. I never really like playing a Shakhtar either. I think that they're a well-drilled, organised team, usually.
Well, you're normally all right at home. but away is always a nightmare. It's not that hard to get beat 3-0 away at Shakhtar, you know, but you normally win 4-1 at home. So it's a lottery.
Exactly. So what do you think in the league? Leicester City. Also, let's just talk about it before we get into it. I told you and Johnny that the narrative was Europa League putting Brendan Rodgers out. I've had a victory already.
Yeah.
It feels like I'm on.
I didn't think we'd go out to Benfica though.
Right.
I always thought we'd beat Benfica. I mean, this fucking Benfica. And it's not 1991 again.
You're going to start getting worried though. If we beat Leicester on Sunday, are you going to start thinking, wow, Pete's cracked the narrative for once?
Oh, if we beat Leicester on Sunday, it'll be the first bit of breathing space we've had in a while. I just feel like we never get any breathing space because even the little winning run we went on at the beginning of this year, it was all against shit teams. It didn't really tell us anything apart from the Chelsea result, and they were a mess at the time. There was nothing to point to a better long-term future. Whereas beating Leicester and beating Benfica in consecutive games would begin to be more of an indication that we're on the right track.
Beating Leicester will be absolutely huge this weekend. And I think that Leicester got beaten by a shit team today. They played all of their star names. Vardy started. They've got no James Maddison. I think they're there for the taking at the weekend. I just don't know where we're going to summon the energy. But if we get through that game, it's 6 days until the Burnley game after that.
Yeah.
And then there's another gap heading into the Spurs game. So if we get through Leicester, then you start going, okay, Arteta's got some time on the training pitch. It's not snowing in the UK, so they'll actually get out there. Saka can be put in a little ball of cotton wool and put in some sort of cryogenic chamber to recover. And then we're on the run.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right. And I think I'm excited because suddenly you go, that Leicester game is the most important game of our season.
Yeah, it is. And then, but the annoying thing is, then you win the Leicester game. If you beat Spurs and Burnley, then you start going, top four's on, lads. Top four could be on. If we did this, and this. A big if, but I'm getting carried away because one victory feels like a massive thing at the moment in this fucking absolutely horrendous season.
Yeah, I think it's gone, top four.
All right, mate. Well, thank you for jumping on this podcast so late at night. It was a pleasure, as always. We will be back on Sunday.
When's the draw for the Europa?
The draw for the Europa is—I don't know. I think it says on the website March, but I'm not sure. I'm sure it will come out, but March isn't that far away. Yeah, it said March is the draw, but I don't know.
I'm excited.
I'm excited too. Look, it's a cup run. I was watching it on CBS, and they were like, Arsenal are a cup team. They're a brilliant cup team. I was like, oh my god, this is like the Cup Winners' Cup thing again.
Wow.
Get that?
I went back because I was like, this, I've got a little bit of a feeling. It's just something in my bones that this reminds me a little bit of the Cup Winners' Cup run in 1994, when we went on to beat Parma, and we were languishing in mid-table all season. Obviously, Alan Smith scored the winner, and the rest is history. But do you know the team we played in the last 16 that year?
Torino.
No, it was Adenza.
Adenza, oh shit, last 16, yeah. It was Adenza, yeah. Torino, PSG.
Yeah, and then, so Adenza, and we won 3-2 on aggregate.
Ooh, I don't give a shit. If we win the Europa League this year and backdoor it into the Champions League, that would be the ultimate shithouse of the season.
Oh, it would be...
It'd be absolutely disgusting.
It'd be great, wouldn't it?
Oh, I would love it. I would love it. And am I reading? Isn't there some weird? Isn't there some other weird third tier competition next year?
Yeah, it's like the Europa Conference.
The Europa Conference. Oh mate, apparently Spurs get into it if they win the League Cup.
It's just somewhat weird. That's just a competition that you don't want to be invited to.
Like, if you work in branding or advertising and they're like, what should we call this third tier shitty competition? Call it like the SpaceX wizard competition. You don't call it the conference. Nothing says, it's like, you know, trying to call a luxury product value. No one's buying. Yeah.
No. And I mean, we were just talking, I think pre-pod, about the final of the Europa and saying, you know, they need to put these finals in some great stadiums. Like, it's in some back end stadium in some backwater stadium in Poland. It's like, why are they not playing the Europa League final the new camp, or you know, like one of the best stadiums? Instead, it's just low end rent.
It's also brutal because, you know, when they move the World Cup into different continents, you're like, okay, well, Africa likes football, Asia likes football, America likes football, but when you put the games in these stadiums where none of their teams have a chance of making it, it's just an expense. It's like an extravagance. But I guess like the football federations, it's, you know, all dodgy deals and
yeah,
whatever goes.
You know what would be, this is completely off topic, but you know what would be fun would be the winner of the Europa playing like the winner of the MLS. Just something completely, it's a bit like a different Super Cup.
Yeah, that would be that. Didn't they just play it? Didn't they just do that?
We could play Miami or something. If we beat, we're good, wouldn't it?
Phil Neville just upped the glamour at Miami.
Oh god!
All right, sorry, mate, you gonna say something?
No, he gets more out of that relationship with Beckham than Beckham gets, I reckon.
Oh yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Right, we'll call it a day on that one. On Sunday, we're going to have on the whistle. It's going to be Matt and Johnny.
And Johnny can explain why he was telling us all that Aubameyang was finished and shouldn't start against Benfica.
He's got some explaining to do, and we might have another special guest on from another podcast. I'm seeing if I can work that out as we speak. So you know the drill. Give us a 5-star rating on I don't know, I'm too tired to even remember what it's called, iTunes, I don't know what it's called these days, and share with your friends, and we'll see you on Sunday. Ciao for now. Thanks for listening.
Peacock streaming the biggest sporting events, exclusive originals, and the latest movies. This February, we've got Super Bowl 56, the 2022 Winter Olympics, and the Peacock original Bel Air. Plus the new movie Marry Me in theaters and streaming Valentine's Day. Sign up now at PeacockTV.com.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.